are now listening to the Soul Trader podcast, music, creativity, and other plans, with your hosts, Simon James Betts and Corey Stewart.
Here we are again. I'm laughing to myself. Corey's clapperboard introductions always crack me up because the funny thing is you cut them out and you're just like, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to.
I still have them tucked away.
Yes. We should do an entire episode that just starts with like 20 minutes of clapperboard.
Yeah, I'm building up to that. Some are funnier than others.
When we get to the 100th episode, it can just be your clapperboard introductions and nothing else. That'd be cool.
It would be cool. But anyway, what are we doing? What are we doing?
Welcome back, dear listener. Season three, episode three.
I'd like to think it's listeners rather than the singular.
Yeah, but I'm talking to the individual.
Of course. Oh, hang on. Let me just smack my wrist. Naughty. Naughty boy.
Okay. Unless, of course, they've got together for a listening party.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool.
I mean, at the moment...
A Soul Trader podcast listening party.
At the moment, we probably wouldn't need a stadium at the moment.
No, but we're working on it. Yeah. We're working on it.
I was thinking...
So, dear what listener...
Yes.
Oh, dear. Oh.
It will be dear listener if we continue like this.
That's right.
Anyway, what are we talking about today? Well, we're going to talk about the selling of catalogues.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about the catalogue to your local store where you're getting some discounts. We're talking about musicians, songwriters selling their catalogues.
Yeah.
To
these faceless corporate types, and what would they be doing with them and all that. It's fascinating how there seemed to be a period of time where, every day or every week there was like another well-known songwriter / artist has sold their songwriting catalogue to a company like Hypnosis, I think, is one of the companies that that is buying up all of these catalogs from these artists, and it got me sort of scratching my head, sort of saying to myself, why would you do it?
Yeah,
well, for the money, of course. But I mean, you go and have a look at these songwriting groups and pages on Facebook, for instance, If you follow what happens in songwriting, you subscribe to these groups, and every now and then you'll have some, numbnut saying, "I've got a song and I want to sell it," and making sure that they make it painfully aware that they are a numbnut, and you have people reply, "Oh, you don't sell your songs; you just license them, or you just keep writing and." Or they give sage advice to a stupid question like, how do I sell my songs? And then you see Bruce Springsteen is selling his catalogue, but he's already made it and all that sort of stuff. So there just seems to be this disconnect, the general advice is you don't sell your songs, and then you see people, of a certain stature selling them. And who do you sell it to? And these are the things that I personally want to find out. And I thought it'd be a good topic for a podcast. Hence why we are, waxing lyrical about it now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe we could initially take a step back to the Paul McCartney example. Which is...
Yes, we were just talking about that before we started.
Yeah, so back in the day, to lay the foundation is that a lot of artists, a lot of recording artists don't own their recordings.
Yeah.
They don't have control over their music. I mean, a classic recent example is Taylor Swift. She re-recorded her first couple of albums or first two or three albums, I'm not sure how many, because... somebody else owned them, and it was actually a manager she had a falling out with, and she basically wanted to get everybody to stop listening to those albums at all. And if they wanted that, those albums, those songs, they could buy the new versions or listen to the new versions. So she was trying to basically say, fuck you, basically. I don't want you listening. I don't want my fans listening to albums which helped that guy out who treated me badly.
Or she'd be saying to that guy, I don't want you profiting any longer.
Exactly.
From my work. And
she felt
it was a stroke of genius. It worked.
Yes, incredibly
well.
And it got a lot of publicity because of it.
Yeah.
And she felt exploited when she was younger. But what happens is a lot of artists don't own their recordings. Often they're owned by record labels. You own the songs, so you own, as a songwriter, you own the fact that you wrote the song, and if the song gets performed, you get a royalty.
The actual recording of it is a separate thing.
Yes, and the playing of the, so the what you can do with the actual recording.
Yeah.
So.
And that's a mechanical. Royalty that you get.
Yes, I'm always.
I need to brush up on these things. This is
the definition of the two.
This is a podcast topic in itself.
Yeah, and a good example of that is my friend Francis Dunnery is that he had an album called Fearless. I'm trying to think whether he did another album after that with the label, but basically what happened was he broke away from the label at some point. I can't remember what stage that was at, but then he went to the label and said, oh, I want to buy my albums off you guys, you know, because I'm going to go off and do my own thing.
Talking about the recordings and the master tapes.
And they basically said, oh, no, we see big things for you in the future. And it was like, you haven't done anything to help my career up until this point. So basically, unfortunately, a lot of our artists get held to ransom.
Yes.
By those labels. Getting back to the Paul McCartney thing is basically Paul McCartney was trying to get control of his songs. He didn't have control of them. He wanted control of them. He wanted to kind of, get control back. And he recorded a song with Michael Jackson at the time. And Paul McCartney knew he'd brought up other, I think he brought up Buddy Holly. Was one of the ones he brought up, but he brought up other music.
Was that Say, Say, Say? Was that the song he recorded with Michael Jackson? Say, say, say what you want, don't leave me here forever.
If you keep singing, we're going to have to pay royalties. But the other one is The Girl Is Mine.
Oh, The Girl Is Mine. Yeah.
Okay. But I think Say, Say, Say as well.
I think so. I don't know.
I think what we
just I think I just wanted to break out in the song.
I think is one of them a Paul McCartney album song and one of them is a Michael Jackson album song? Do they effectively put one on your album?
The Girl Is Mine is the one that is the one that I was. Yeah.
Well, it's not the one you were singing.
I know it wasn't the one I was singing. I was singing another one within that sort of era. But The Girl Is Mine is the.
Basically, they were working together and obviously Paul was already buying stuff up and Paul said, look, the way to make money in the music industry is to buy the rights to music. He said, I'm in the middle of trying to buy the rights to the Beatles stuff. And at which point Michael Jackson went out and bought the rights to the Beatles stuff.
Yeah.
And obviously pissed Paul McCartney rightly off.
Well, the thing, another thing in addition to that, I just remembered that when that sale came up, and I'm paraphrasing here, but I think this is what I heard, that there was other people in line to buy it, and then when those people heard that Paul McCartney was in line to buy it, they all stepped back.
Except for Michael Jackson.
And they went, we'll withdraw our offer.
Yep. You know,
I think that's what happened, or one of the things that happened, but Michael Jackson didn't. And
He effectively outbid Paul McCartney. So, that's obviously...
That's got to hurt.
Oh, yeah.
You know, especially when Michael sings in The Girl Is Mine, I'm a lover, not a fighter. You know, it's like, it's one of the most cringeworthy sort of things that he's ever done. And, that would really cut to the quick, I reckon.
That's pretty harsh. But it kind of... I guess back in the day, you know, people were trying to own that stuff because, there was money in it, in that sense. And if we kind of, I mean, maybe if we flip to the current days, we're talking about primarily, but not only, primarily bigger artists who are, you know, established later in their career. That's where the ones that kind of hit the headlines, I guess, probably more than others, which is like your Bob Dylan's,
Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah. You know, people like Sting. People like that. Yeah. And I had some examples here on my iPad, on my trusty iPad, but just to give you some kind of context, if I bring my iPad over here so I can kind of face the microphone, but it was like Bob Dylan, he sold 100% of his publishing catalogs to Universal Music Publishing, which is actually, you know, a traditional publishing company, for an estimated $300 to $400 million. And then it also says that just recently, so publishing is basically, you write a song, and if you have a publishing company, then that publishing company, they sign a deal with you, and they basically go out and try to, you know, promote that song, get it, depending on who you are, but they might be trying to get it placed in movies and things like that. Or if you're a songwriter, they might be trying to sell it to other artists.
Yeah.
You know, sell it to a Mariah Carey or a whoever, somebody who, you know, maybe plays other people's songs. But, yeah, there was an update where Sony acquired his master recordings for another $200 million. So he sold the recordings, his physical recordings of his albums to one company and the songwriting to another company.
Right.
So
a cool half a bill then.
Yeah.
$600 million.
Yeah. Yours. I mean, and you look at somebody like Bob Dylan and kind of go, well, he's later in his career. And I think an example is Prince.
Yeah.
When Prince passed away, obviously it was sudden. There was a lot of infighting in his family over his estate. And that includes, you know, his masters and his publishing.
The vault that he had full of unreleased stuff, and that would have been
a
nightmare.
Basically, by selling it off before you pass away, you just create a big pile of cash people can fight over. But they're not fighting over the potential. How the bloody hell do we manage this guy's career?
Yeah.
You know, I even think about it, you know, even as simple as my perspective, right? I've written some songs. I've got, you know, we've got songs in the works. If something happened to me and my family have to go, what do we do with his music? He would have really liked people to hear this music, but he hasn't recorded all of it yet. How do we kind of, you know,
pass it on to me?
Well, yeah, not everybody has a kind of songwriting partner, but
I know what you mean. Yeah.
From that perspective, it's quite challenging. But look, the others on the list, I mean, we won't go into the amounts necessarily, but like Neil Young, Stevie Nicks, Whitney Houston, I'm just skipping the list of some of the Lindsey Buckingham, Richie Sambora. Everything he did with Bon Jovi, he sold, which is an interesting one.
Does it say for how much?
No, that's price undisclosed.
Right.
But, you know, Blondie and Air Supply, Culture Club.
Air Supply.
Devo. But the interesting one that in the list also was, two, The Killers and Imagine Dragons, who are newer acts, let's call them newer acts. They're younger acts in their career.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the kind of, it seems a bit more confusing. But you were wondering why people would do it. I think that the example I gave in our chat where we chat back and forth about these ideas just was, if you go to a music publisher and go, will you promote my music? I'll pay you to promote my music. And they turn around and go, no, I'll pay you to promote your music. You know, they're almost basically, they're buying your music. And the thing is that it's still linked to you.
Yeah.
So if they go out and make you more famous, you can still do live touring, but if you want to, especially if you're one of the younger artists. If you're Bob, you might want to just go take the money and retire. But if you're one of the younger artists, if they go and make you more famous, you know, everybody suddenly knows your songs, that's more ticket sales.
Well, I suppose that's then the company who is purchasing the catalogues,
mm-hmm.
the songs or whatever, they would be looking at that purely as just a digital asset, yep. which is essentially what it is. It's just a digital asset. And one of the things that we were talking about previously before coming on here, you know, sort of fleshing out this idea, was David Bowie in yep. In the 90s was experimenting with Bowie bonds, you know, in which people would invest in the future return of royalties from songs that he hadn't written yet, based on the returns of royalties from songs that he had written. So in a process called securitization, which is, in a previous life I was involved with a company called Aussie Home Loans, which dealt with securitization, and that was how they raised their money to fund the mortgages that they were handing out to people, buying houses and stuff. But in a similar situation, in which a company like Aussie Home Loans or any other of those newer sort of online lenders were raising their money, David Bowie was doing the same for him. But instead of packaging mortgages and selling it on the stock market for future returns, it was his royalties, which netted him a lot of money. And it was absolutely brilliant concept. But of course, you wouldn't expect anything less from someone like David Bowie, you know. It was a brilliant sort of way out there, way ahead of his time move. It's digital asset. You know, we look at it as little pockets of art that we create from nothing. But a company that purchases a songwriting catalogue off an artist, they would just look at that as a digital asset that they can exploit down the track. And I suppose what this means, you know, with all of these artists that are more than happy to accept money for their catalogues, is like there's probably going to be a shitload of retrospective releases that are going to be put out onto the market, you know, best of and greatest hits and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, which I suppose is one of the ways in which these companies are going to get their return on investment.
Yeah.
Because why else would you buy Bruce Springsteen's catalogue?
Yeah.
You know, he's still alive, he's still touring. I mean, God, you know, hope this is a long time coming, you know, Bruce Springsteen finally, you know, shuffles the mortal coil and goes to the great gig in the sky. Well, then that's absolute payday, isn't it, for these particular companies? Yeah. Because they then have a digital asset, which is now a legacy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably part of that.
I'm thinking we just found one of the answers. You know, you got all these artists that are sort of at that age now that within the next 10, 20 years, you know, they're not going to be here.
Yeah, we just need to keep an eye out that, you know, like all the artists signed by one company don't start dropping off the perch or in tragic accidents. It's just like,
don't give many ideas.
Everybody we've signed, we're taking them on a joy flight. That's right. The plane's gone down.
That's right. It's like, oh yes, oh we have this hydrogen filled Zeppelin that we'll put everyone in. We call it the Led Zeppelin, and we'll take you over the ocean. Yeah,
I mean, there's certainly. I think the thing is that these companies who are paying hundreds of million dollars, they're playing very much.
The amount of money they're talking about is just eye-wateringly
huge. Well, I think there's a few things. They're playing a long game, and also I don't off the top of my head remember, but, you know, copyright used to expire 50 years after you died.
Yeah.
And it was something, I reckon it was something weird. Now, you know, if you're listening to this podcast and you've got any factual information to, you know, and you see this posted on social media or whatever, please comment. But I feel like it was something weird where, you know, if you have co-written a song, mm-hmm. like so a Paul McCartney, John Lennon song,
mm-hmm.
As far as I understand it, the way it used to work is if one of those people dies, 50 years after that person dies,
yeah.
all copyright on that song is extinguished for both parties.
Right, but now I think it's 75 years after the last person.
Yeah, I was going to say they extended it, and I do actually think that John Lennon was probably part of that because he's died so young. He's written stuff that is so, you know, popular.
Yeah, well, now it's like, well, it's 43 years, isn't it? Since
yeah, I was going to say because we were nearing that kind of point.
Jeez,
it's a bit scary, isn't it?
It's very scary.
I think they're playing the long game in the sense that they're looking at it and going, well, you know, Bob Dylan's only around for a certain amount of time, but we've got the songs for that amount of time and, you know, we can keep getting royalties for another, you know, 75 plus years, yeah. however long he's alive.
Yeah.
And we'll get that kick when he does die because suddenly everybody can go and stream all his songs or buy his albums or yeah. do what they do when people pass away, which for is sure. pretty common.
Yeah.
I think for the younger artists, it's also interesting. You know, the people like The Killers, and off the top of my head, I can't remember if The Killers actually had an undisclosed amount. I'm going to have a quick look at that. The Killers, yeah, it was undisclosed, but Imagine Dragons, who had a song I used to listen to quite a lot because my kind of kids were listening to it, and theirs was 100 million for
wow.
everything written up to a certain point. I'm not sure what year it was, a few years ago, maybe 2020 or something like that. So that deal doesn't include future stuff that they write.
Right.
But what it does do is it puts their music in the hands of people who are going to push it and potentially, again, grow their fame. Yeah. And then down the track, they benefit from that. And I guess people think, where can you put a song? But it's like snippets of songs. I mean, there's two ads on. There's two McDonald's ads at the moment, and one has "I Was Made for Loving You" on it,
yeah.
and one has "Is It Living on a Prayer" Bon Jovi song. But the songs can be placed anywhere in movies, in advertising. They can be licensed if people want to use them. You know, just as you know, in videos and stuff like that, like not movies or TV shows, obviously, but, you know, like online content as well, you can license in those kind of spaces.
Yeah.
So there's obviously the original song itself, you know, that can be just played on the radio or streamed. So those companies, you know, going to be making plenty of money.
Mm-hmm.
To put it in context, if you play a song in Australia live at a gig, you play an original song at just a pub, basically, where there's no tickets, you get paid about 80 cents.
Yeah.
If it gets played on the radio, you get about $4. If it gets played on the TV, it's not quite double that again, I think.
Yeah, it's more if like it's on TV.
Six or seven or something.
Yeah.
It only has to be a portion of the song.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be the whole song.
Yeah.
In the TV kind of situation where it's put in a TV show, and then obviously they can license a song where they pay you a sum of money to have the song. I'm not actually sure because I haven't actually had a song in a movie, but I don't know whether you can still get an additional royalty for broadcast. I mean, obviously with your song being broadcast on radio, you know, around the world. You can understand how much these companies make.
I think it depends on the licensing deal.
Yeah.
I think there's a component of it where, you know, if they pay you up front and they for a certain period of time and they have lock, stock and barrel, or it might be, you know, you get some of that as a sync fee and some of, and then you're able to still retain royalties or something like
yeah.
that. It just depends on it. There's many, many ways to do that.
The interesting thing with publishing, which is obviously publishing, is this isn't Well, obviously some people's rights have been bought by publishing companies, so it kind of is. Mm. But the interesting thing with publishing deals is, so if we were to sign a publishing deal, it would probably be something like 60-40. So we would get 60%, publishing company would get 40%. Mm-hmm. Might be 70-30, who knows. But artists like Sting, they had, or he had, a publishing deal that was 110. And you kind of go, how is that possible? But what it was they only pay you quarterly.
Yeah.
And Sting's music makes so much money from all the radio play. They get paid quarterly and they pay you 6 monthly.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they earned so much money that they could earn enough interest on the money.
Yeah.
That they could pay him more than the royalties was worth, and it was still worth having him on their books. And a lot of those big artists are like that, where it's like they can afford to pay you more. They just pay you in a different time frame than they're getting the money, and they just live off the interest.
Yeah.
But you imagine that, you know, on an Australian radio station, high rotation is something insane. It's like 5 times a day on a single radio station. If they're playing your song, you know, and you had high rotation, it was 5 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
You times that by...
Well, if it's syndicated nationwide...
Yeah, and if you pay that by every radio station, you know, globally, you realise that somebody like an Elton John or a Sting, $4 a play, and it's just a staggering amount of money that they're earning or their publishing company is earning to pass on.
Yeah.
So this is kind of an extension, I guess, of that, where artists are kind of going, so those younger artists, for them, it's like cash injection. It's like, here's enough money to live for the rest of your life. You don't have to do anything. And yeah, we own any future royalties of your music, but, you know, you're only going to get that for your lifetime.
Yeah.
As real benefit.
So they're paying you a lump sum of what you would be getting through the lifetime of your career anyway.
Yeah.
They're, 4 songs up to that point.
Yeah, they're basically saying, look, here's a pile of money.
Yeah.
And as a young artist or younger artist, I mean, compared to, you know, your Bob Dylans and your Bruce Springsteen, you can kind of go, well, that secures your life. You're no longer kind of like, oh, can we keep this going? You know, can we struggle into the next kind of, we got to record another album and, you know, we got to find money for the next tour. They're going, here's $100 million. It's just like, yeah, you're probably pretty good, you know, you'll be able to get by, you know. And I think that's what they do, is they kind of go, look, if we take this lump sum, they're interested in our music, we take the lump sum, we can reinvest that into our music and secure our lives. We're still going to tour. We're still making all the money from the touring. We're just not making the, you know, the songwriting portion of, and I think we've spoken about it on the podcast before, that if you do a ticketed show, like a Michael Jackson show back in the day, or somebody who's alive, Ed Sheeran, if you're supporting Ed Sheeran and you play 10 songs and Ed Sheeran plays 10 songs, of the ticket sales, a percentage of that money is a royalty to the songwriters, and that gets distributed evenly per song.
Yeah.
So if there's an amount sitting there, if it's $10,000, I don't know, then Ed would get 5 if he wrote all his songs, just as an example. Ed's songwriters would get 5 and you as the support act, Soul Trader, would get 5.
Right.
And then we'd only have to split it between 2 people, and Ed Sheeran would have to split it between
37 people.
All the people that he writes with, which is quite a lot in some cases.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's that. That's the, you'd miss out on that.
Yeah.
For all your future touring, you're missing out on that.
Yeah.
Because that's going to the people you sold your music to.
Right.
And any time your song's played on the radio, you're not getting paid. That's going to them, depending on which countries pay those fees. I'm not sure globally you know, what the breakdown is of live performance and airplay royalties and how that all kind of works and what it is outside of Australia. But, I mean, I don't know. I reckon there's
so benefits. Would you go down that path?
If it was $100 million, yeah. you know, I think I would, because I think that one of the stresses.
I suppose a better question would be, you know, is that concept something that you would consider? And of course, that depends on the amount of money that's on offer.
Yeah, look,
you know, if you're talking about 100 mil, it's like, well, yeah, it'd be pretty hard to turn that down. But I mean,
yep.
You know, the money that would be offered would be in proportion to how well known you are or not well known you are. Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, it becomes a different question if you're such a successful artist that somebody walks up to you and says, "I'll give you $100 million for your back catalogue," because, you know, $100 million for, you know, 99.99% of the population is like, holy shit, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I think the thing is that if you kind of take the emotion out of it, which is they're not stopping you playing your songs, they're not taking your babies away. If you look at it like that, you're building, you know, if you're building buildings, do you know, you're building something.
Yeah.
Something, you know, like maybe you're building fun parks, so just to kind of relate it to something that brings people joy.
Right.
And, you know, they're not stopping you going to the fun park and still enjoying it all. They're not stopping, you know, all they're doing is saying, I'll give you some money now instead of you getting it later.
Hmm.
Is that good with you?
Hmm.
And you're going, yeah, sounds good. Because the thing is, 100 million bucks, even if you're splitting that between a four-member band, it's so much money that, and I don't know how rich these bands are. I don't know how rich the Killers are. I mean, their amount wasn't disclosed, but Imagine Dragons, I don't know how big they are. I mean, I don't actually have a concept of how much money they've potentially earned.
Yeah.
I don't know how much $100 million is to them. I would still assume it's a fairly large amount of money. But, yeah, I mean, you can kind of just live off the interest, you know. You can just put that money in the bank, live off the interest. I mean, if your current income stream, which mostly comes from live performance anyway, that's how the music industry has changed. It used to come from album sales and now it comes from live performance.
Yeah.
They're not taking that away from you.
Yeah.
And so you can keep doing that. So they're not even, when they say I'll pay you now but you're not going to get money ongoing, they're not even taking away your main income stream. There was a deal that Robbie Williams did, it's probably 10 years ago now, but he basically, as the industry shifted and the profits moved away from album sales to live touring,
yeah,
he signed a record deal. So it was with a record company. And they signed a deal where they got, you know, a percentage of his album sales,
yeah,
and a percentage of his touring.
Yeah, I think you're talking about a 360 deal. So they have so basically a 360 deal is that they have a percentage in everything that you do. So touring, merch, record sales.
Is bad ads for South Australia? Whatever he's doing at the moment, Robbie Williams.
Where he pretends to get into Cruise FM or whatever it's called.
Oh, that's what it is, yeah. Where he pretends to get into a car.
Smooth FM.
He pretends to get into a car and then they have a picture of a car driving through Adelaide and it's like, yeah, it's the same car, but he's not in it, is he?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Know. Yeah.
Please.
Those deals are called 360, 360 deals because it's basically, you know.
Do you reckon they made him
draw a circle around your whole career and it's like, you know, the record company will take a percentage of everything that you do.
I'm wondering whether they took too much of his money, so now he's got to do ads for radio stations like that, or they made him do that ad. They said, Robbie, we need some more money.
I don't know.
Got this ad for you. It's paying $25. We're going to take half of it. I mean, how much are they paying? Like, I don't even know what radio station that is, to be honest.
I couldn't tell you. It's probably the same amount of money they're paying Katy Perry for Menulog adverts.
Oh, Menulog, it must be. No, like Menulog are probably wrong.
Well, Menulog are a global company, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, they're like...
Whereas
they're like,
Smooth FM is just some, you know, bone fuck fucking, you know...
I don't know, I was wondering...
Radio station
it's probably part of Oz Stereo. It's probably rebranding of something.
Oh, like, I don't
who
know.
Knows?
I don't know. It's another thing that people don't listen to.
What, like a podcast?
Now, podcasts are different to radio.
No, I mean,
terrestrial radio is dying just like bloody newspapers and old school media, basically.
It's true. Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, well, I don't.
Why would people not want to listen to us?
Well, don't ask me. I don't know. I find myself incredibly fascinating. Dear listener.
Yes.
Listener, single. can you please comment?
Oh dear.
But no, I mean, when we announced the podcast was coming back, you know, we had a real surge of listens. Yeah. Where I assume some people who kind of went, well, I need to find out about this. So, you know,
there were probably some others that went, oh, you guys went away. Oh, really?
I treat this podcast it's a slow burn.
It is a slow burn.
It's more of a smolder.
It's like that album track that just grows on you. You know, with every listen, it's just like, oh yeah. You just or that movie that you see a few times that, you know, for some reason you want to see it again, and then you get a little bit more and a little bit more out of it, and then it's like you're, you know, 98 in your top 100 movies.
What? Yeah. What I need to do is start listening to full episodes again, because in the early days I listened to every episode start to finish.
Yeah.
And I actually quite enjoyed kind of listening back and just mulling over the conversation.
You get into a bit of a you know, zen meditative state.
But I haven't done that as much recently, which I probably had to. Oh, good, good. No, I'm glad one of us is.
Yeah, well, I mean, doing the audio.
Yeah.
Getting it all ready, I mean, you know.
But see, if I was listening to it, I'd be listening to it through, like, Spotify or, you know, like, I would listen to it like that, or through Buzzsprout.
Right.
So it would actually record as it listened. So then we'd have to... No, it's not that bad, folks. No, we appreciate you. And, I mean, I'd be interested to... I mean, personally, you know, a lot of people talk about artists selling out and things like that. I'd be interested to hear from the audience. Like, if you're listening to the podcast, go onto our social media. We post about the podcast and comment there. It'd be interesting if you're a big fan of an artist. Would you care less whether they've sold off their catalogue? And, you know, because you couldn't, I think you could look at it as a big cash grab, but you can also look at it as a way to potentially sustain their career or just kind of secure their legacy. Yeah. Like, they're basically saying, you're going to do a better job of securing my legacy to this company than my family is fighting over the scraps when I pass away. There's that element to it.
That is an interesting question, whether, you know, if you, you know, you place an artist on a pedestal and then all of a sudden you find out that, you know, they sell their catalogue to another company. It's like, what would you think of them? I think it would also depend on what type of artist they are. You
know? Yes.
Because if, say, you know, said artist was one of those, you know, vehement punks that went, well, I'm not going to sell out and all that sort of stuff, and then all of a sudden they sell their catalogue, and you were a fan that, you know, hung on to that premise of, yeah, I like this artist because they're not going to sell out, and they've just fucking sold out.
They stick it to the man, and they sold it to the man.
Oh my God, what's going on? Yeah. You know, they had this cognitive dissonant sort of existential crisis. But no, I think it does depend. What do I think of it? I suppose at the end of the day, you know, if you are at the sort of the twilight end of your career, in which the last thing that you want to do is more world tours and all that sort of stuff, because you've been there, done that, you've got nothing to prove anymore. You know, all you want to do is get up in the morning and write a song, sip coffee, you know, just read a book.
Tell people to get off your lawn.
Yeah.
Get off my lawn.
You know, and I can understand. And you know, what was Bruce Springsteen's total that he sold his, $300 million?
Yeah.
$400 million? So, I don't know. The website that we're, there is this huge list on, what's the URL? It's Alan Cross's.
A journal of musical things.com.
Yeah. I think Alan Cross is the guy, Canadian journalist, music journalist. He's absolutely brilliant. Check him out. And he's got this list. And, I mean, this idea, we've been talking about it for a while, and sort of one of the things that you had said to me, Simon, is like, yeah, we'll talk about it, but we need to get a list of, you know, we need to find out how many people have done it, you know, have done the dirty deed, you know. And so I found this article, and it was like, I'm looking at it, and it's like, all of these artists, I'm thinking, shit, this is huge. So I sent the link to you, and I'm staggered by the amount of people that have just decided to throw everything in the air and go, right, I'm just going to jump into this pit of, you know, sort of selling off my stuff.
I mean,
but I mean, when you look into it a little bit more, it's like you can understand why some people are doing it, because, as you say, you know, it's securing their legacy. And you know, if you're at the end, you know, the end of your touring career, it does make sense.
Yes,
you know, it does make sense. And you know, more power to you.
I think,
if you're young, I'm still really dubious of, you know, if you're a young emerging or an artist that's coming through the ranks, and you've got some guy in a suit coming up and saying, oh, you know, we'll give you this amount of money if we can have control. As soon as I hear that someone's got control over something that's rightfully mine, my back gets up, irrespective of how much money you're talking about. But I'm a control freak, so it's like I've got to, you know, I'd have some issues that I'd need to sort out.
So down the track,
I'd need to go and see a therapist. Or
down
something.
The track, there'll be like a Simon has sold his share of the Soul Trader. Corey is, you know, sticking to his guns.
And I'm holding out. Like Kiss would be, I suppose. Yeah. Kiss wouldn't do it, would they?
Well, no. I mean, there is an article of Kiss talking about the fact that theirs is more than just songwriting. It's about the merchandise and the brand.
Absolutely. And if you're paying for Kiss's catalogue, you're also paying for the concept of Kiss coffins, aren't you?
Yes, and condoms.
And condoms.
You know,
getting you from birth to death.
Yes, exactly.
And everywhere in between. I mean, you know, and true to Kiss's form, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they're just holding out.
Yeah, I mean, I think.
And why wouldn't they? You know, the because other thing is they're absolutely right. You know, it is a whole package.
Yeah, Kiss has diehard fans.
Yeah.
Their fans are not all old. You know, they're the kind of.
Oh, it's multi-generational.
Yeah, they're the kind of artists where. You know,
they're creating their own legacy through their audience.
Yeah, so
you know, it's like the legend of Kiss will be, you know, 50 years from now, you know, it's like they'll still be talking about it.
Yes.
Because it just gets rehashed and rehashed through the generations. Oh, this is Grandpa's favorite band, you know.
Yeah.
And
I think their music is worth masterful. A massive amount alone.
Yeah.
But the classic example is that I mean, I work in graphic design and branding and stuff and design logos for people. But, you know, they talk about McDonald's as being a brand.
Yes.
And, they technically talk McDonald's about being McDonald's being a real estate company because they own real estate on every major intersection around the world.
Yeah.
But McDonald's brand versus its entire global infrastructure, the brand is worth 10 times as much as every single asset they own. And the same probably applies to Kiss is, you can talk about their music catalog, and go, oh yeah, the music catalog, maybe it's not worth as much as some other people, maybe it's not, I don't know.
Yeah.
They do have very diehard fans, as we were just saying, but they may not be had as many number one hits, but their brand is going to be worth 10 times as much as
the music.
But yeah, I mean, I was actually just looking at this list while you were talking, Carol Bayer Sager's on here, so it made me laugh. Start to chuckle because of Monty Python. Do you know that skit about philosophers?
I'd have to.
And they're talking about
refresh my memory. Burt
Bacharach. Do all philosophers have a B in their name? And it's just like, or what, you know? And it's just like, you know. But But his songs were sang by Carol Bayer-Sager. And it's just like, you know, anyway. But Linda Ronstadt, this, I'm going to write off some names.
Okay.
Linda Ronstadt, Paul Simon.
How much was Paul Simon?
Undisclosed. A lot of them are undisclosed. Pussies. But modern, like Tina. Whoa. Tina Turner. Sorry, my page just moved. Tina Turner, The Weeknd, and Jake and Justin Bieber on a some hit songs they did. You know, ZZ Top, David Bowie, John Legend, another kind of younger artist. You know, the list, and there's quite a lot of artists on here that I don't know without kind of reading the detail or looking them up, but. There's artists on here that I don't know who sold their catalogue for $100 million, which is a bit scary, really.
Name one. Which one? Which one sort of captures your eye?
Louis Fonsi.
Who?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I'm guessing that's how you say his name. Oh, the horse with no name. Oh, wow. Horse with no name. Jerry Beckley and Dewey Bunnell.
Oh, from America.
From America. Yeah, they're from America. No, yeah. The band. Yeah, awesome. They sold 40 million.
You know, okay.
There's a bit of cash floating around, believe
there
me.
There is.
But I mean, I think what you're saying is, I get what you're saying about losing control, but I think the great thing, the way to look at this is, They're taking, yes, they're maybe taking your baby away, you know, something you've nurtured and, you know, but it's in their absolute best interest to treat it probably even more respectfully than you have. So as an artist, you don't want to be playing your back catalogue necessarily. You know, you don't necessarily, you know, you move on.
Sure.
You know, you go to a concert and somebody doesn't play all their classic hits and you're just like, how dare you?
Yeah, and it's like someone saying, American Pie, you know, Don McLean or something.
Exactly.
Although he doesn't mind playing it.
No, I mean, you look.
I know they're Radiohead. Someone yells out, creep. And
they're like,
Tom York's, fuck off, you know. Or words to that effect.
Yeah.
You know,
So these people are technically probably going to give more respect to your back catalogue than you are.
Yeah.
And in the process, potentially help your career. But they're basically saying, look, you know, I'm buying stuff you don't want anymore. You know, you're not kind of that keen on it anymore. You're trying to do new stuff. You're trying to move forward. So as a younger artist, I still see the benefit in going, okay, cool. Yeah, I don't mind.
So does that mean, I just had a thought. So does that mean that you look at an article like that and you're a young artist and you try it, right, I'm going to get as famous as I can. It's almost like building a business so you can sell it.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Isn't it? Essentially, you're building up digital asset, which is, you know, I'm going to write songs, I'm going to do this, I'm going to get to some sort of level that some suit is going to come over and say, I'm going to give you this much for it. And it's like, okay, that's my blue period, I suppose.
Yeah.
I'm going to sell that off. Bang. It's like building a business so you can sell it. So it becomes a cynical fucking exercise of, you know, creating something and then just selling it off.
Yeah. Look, there's plenty of people.
Because, I mean, that's what it smacks of.
Yeah. Look, there's plenty of people obviously out there who do things, you know, with that kind of, as being part of the driving force.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you and I want to do it to the point where we're making money and we can make a living out of it, you know, wholeheartedly, and we can like get up every morning and go, this is great, you know, house is paid for, I can just write songs and not have a worry in the world.
Hmm.
Like, which obviously $100 million does that pretty good.
Well, yeah, it would.
But I think, you know, look, there's other ways to look at the music industry cynically as well, in the sense that, you know, I've looked up artists where every single song is a barely 2 minutes long, because a 2 minute song gets you paid for a stream as the same amount as a 5 minute song.
Oh, on Spotify.
So everybody just produces music that suits the algorithm or the payment structure of somebody like Spotify.
And we've already spoken about sort of
and so
bowing to the algorithm god.
Yeah, and you can be a bit cynical about that as well. And so, look, you're going to find people who are in a position where it's like, oh, look, I'd be interested if somebody came to me and wanted to buy my catalogue.
Mm.
And I think it's changed. It's definitely changed with albums used to be the thing, and you know, you just had that music master, and that was because you wanted to produce more albums.
Yeah.
Whereas now, the opportunities that exist out there for music to be sold on,
mm-hmm.
You know, into movies, into advertising, into TV,
yeah.
You know, obviously streaming movies, and you know, when we say TV, I guess that's a funny word these days because, you know, like Netflix has a TV section.
Yes.
And they create stuff for the TV section and stuff for the movie section. And it's like, yeah. Well, one is just a short form series, yes. And one is a movie.
Yes.
But that's they call right. it TV still. Yeah. But, you know, there's so many opportunities for music to be sold. And as an artist, we don't have time to do all the things we want to do. Mm. I mean, we look at it and go, we would love to get to a position where we have, say, an editor for the podcast. Who does the video and the audio, does it for us,
yeah.
And manages our social media and books all our gigs, and you and I can just sit around and write songs and just, you know, focus on that.
Yeah.
So I get when people go, I can't maximize the potential of this music and I could pay somebody to do that,
yeah.
Which cost me money to start with, and then I potentially make some return, or I can just sell it to this guy who's going to give me $100 million now, I can put it in the bank, I can then build on from here.
Yeah.
And I it's almost like closing a chapter for these younger artists and going, okay.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, forward. It's really easy for me to sit here and be, you know, the cynical, jaded prick that I am at times. You know, it's really easy to do that. And without being in that position where I've had to think about, oh, okay, well this is actually a possibility, you know, what would I do? And chances are, you know, if I ever did get into a position where I had to make that choice, then things would have happened in my life to yep. conspire that to happen that would have changed the way that I would be thinking about this particular issue.
Yep.
And I'd probably say yes. Because I would have more, information at my disposal. I would have
yeah.
more knowledge at my disposal, and I would be in a different position in my life than where I am now.
Yes.
So, you know, yeah. I mean, you know, I think that it's a very interesting sort of thought exercise, I suppose.
Yeah,
for me anyway, personally.
I mean,
it's like, oh, would I do it or would I not?
Yeah, I mean, I think my personal, you know, talking about artists selling out earlier, and this is maybe a form of that.
Sure.
I just go, my biggest concern is that, you know, you move up the rungs of success in yeah. music, whether it's playing, you know, pubs around town and wineries and stuff like that, where you start to progress and you're going, yeah, I get a few more gigs now. Oh, yeah. You know, that kind of, and it's like, can I sustain this?
Yeah, yeah.
That, if you kind of stress about that, which I do a little bit, that's never going away. That's never going away because you're always like, can I sustain this? Can I move to the next level? Can I sustain this? Can I move to the next level? And this single kind of payment thing is actually good in a sense because it kind of secures you up and it's just like, okay, cool. We're good. We've got some money. We're not going to have to worry about paying the bills. And, okay, let's move on to the next level. So it's actually like somebody coming along and saying, look, let me take all your potential future earnings that you're worrying about, give them to you now,
yeah,
and then you can just go on with confidence.
Well, I suppose you could look at it as like an investor sort of cash injection into your music business.
Yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just think that it's like, I mean, and it's probably, you know, a thing to ponder is it's like, I wonder if somebody came to you right now and said, I'll give you $100,000 every year for your songwriting successes. You can still go and play gigs and make money from that, which is effectively what these people are doing. You can still earn the money from that.
Mm.
But any success that comes from your songwriting, you're not going to stop writing songs or stop trying to have successful songs just because you got that money coming in. You know, like, you know, the killers aren't just packing up shop and dusting their hands and going, we've done.
Yeah.
Just because of that. I mean, they might be. I don't know what age they are these days.
Well, if the only reason that they wrote songs was just to make a buttload of money, well, then that's it. But, no, I mean, you're right. You're a songwriter and you do what you do because there's, you know, for more than just the money. I mean,
yeah. God,
if you did it just because of the money, it's like you'd do something else, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Really? I mean, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, I mean,
when you're at that level where you're trying to sort of climb up,
Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, I think that it's obviously, you know, you want to, it's harder in using that example of saying if you had this amount of money, because you still want to feel progression.
Yeah.
You know, but you would with live gigs, you know, like if you, and if you had that money to secure up your life, you go, I can spend more time recording so I can get better, so I can get better gigs.
Well, the measure of progression would be based on, it would be wholly and solely based on your interpretation of it rather than how much money you make from it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you would set your own sort of definitions of what progression is, what success is,
yeah,
rather than, oh, I'm making more money now than before, therefore I'm progressing. It's like you'd find other measurements.
Of course, yeah, yeah. And, I mean, it would just, it only takes, as I said, it only takes away one portion of it. I think sure. It's, I'd be interested, as I said before, people, you know, were saying, you know, what are your thoughts on it? I mean, I personally couldn't, in this current climate, I kind of go, do what you want, fill your boots.
Mm.
I mean, it doesn't, if an artist feels it's the right thing to do for them,
yeah,
I go, then do it. Like, if you think that making your music more commercial is the right thing for you, then do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked Metallica's music up until the Black Album.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they kind of went, we got to be more commercial to appeal to a wider audience. And I never really enjoyed it after that. It became a little bit soulless for me. And that wasn't me judging their decision to do that. It was just the music changed.
Yeah.
And it was, I really liked the rawness of their early stuff.
Sure.
You know, but do what you want to do. Like, it's your life, not,
I go, do what you got to do. Who are we to, you know, say to any of these artists, oh, no, you shouldn't do it?
No, I mean, wish Kiss didn't put the makeup back on, because they were producing really good music up until when they did. Mm. Great music. I really loved it. But they put the music back on and became a Kiss cover band, effectively. And I go...
The makeup.
When they put the makeup back on.
Yeah,
they just,
yeah, yeah, right.
You know, and I wasn't excited by that.
Did they ever release new music after that?
After they put the makeup back on?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Multiple
albums. Yeah, but those albums were a bit... To me,
as you can see, I'm not a Kiss aficionado.
Those albums were a little bit cheesy. They didn't really progress... They were kind of like a, you know, like a reimagination of the past, in my opinion.
Right.
They've got some albums. I'll send you some links to albums. Okay. Like, I'm trying to think of the name of the album that they recorded, and it actually got released after they'd put the makeup back on, and it was like the last album they did, and it was much heavier, and it was, you know, much more, not grungy, but like just a bit more, you know, heavy.
Right.
And they were doing some great stuff. So I wish they didn't do it, but it's not my position to, you know, bitch and moan and go, no, well, you just sold out. It's just like, you know, Kiss were always about making, you know, the most out of what they had, and good luck to them.
Yeah.
So if you're out there and you're selling your catalogue, if you happen to be doing that for 100 million and also listen to our podcast, come and be a guest.
Oh yeah, that'd be good.
We can have a conversation with you about it, what it's actually like.
We can go blow by blow into how it all came about.
What I can't believe is we've managed to chat for an hour about this, but that's just, we enjoy chatting. So yeah. Anyway, if you're out there listening to a podcast, oh, I should recommend a song, shouldn't I? Go and listen to, it'll be linked on the Buzzsprout page, Gotta Know. We haven't done that.
Gotta
one,
know
have we?
What you're doing, baby.
We haven't done that.
Gotta
one,
know
have we?
Right now.
I'm thinking, did we do that one on the first? Oh no, I think we did that one.
Oh.
How about We Can't Be Together Anymore? That's a better one.
Okay.
Because we're talking about people getting separated from their babies in their catalogue.
Oh, okay. Yeah, fair enough.
I'll link that one in the Buzzsprout page.
I thought you were giving me an ultimatum.
Yeah. I thought. I think you are every time you sing it.
Oh right. True.
Yeah.
No, it's not though.
No, but yeah, go have a listen to that. Comment on the social media posts and do one thing for us. If you've got this far, which I really hope you have, tell a friend. Tell a friend about the podcast. You know, send
share
it to somebody.
The love.
Yeah, share it out there. We're going to do that at the start of the podcast next time. Yeah. Say, share this podcast.
Yep. Sharing is caring.
Before you turn off.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
No worries. Ciao for now.
Bye.
Been listening.
listening to the Soul Trader podcast, music, creativity, and other plans with your hosts, Simon James Betts and Corey Stewart. Be sure to check out soultradermusic.com and CoreyStewartOnline.com. See you next week.